This is our last class in the study of Deuteronomy, and we'll be studying beginning in chapter 31, going through the end of this book, the book of words, or the second giving of the law, as is given in the Latin title. And what's happening right now, just to refresh our minds and what's happening and get our minds back in Deuteronomy, back in the Old Testament. What's happening right now? Where is this great nation? Where are they physically in the storyline? Do you remember? Do you remember where they are physically? Where are they encamped? Mount Sinai. Well, at the end of Deuteronomy, they're actually just poised, ready to go into the land of Canaan. They're just on the other side of the river from Jericho. And so everybody in the land of Canaan is kind of, you know, scared right now. They're afraid of what's about to happen, and so Moses is giving them the law again, and he's basically preaching to them again this law. And in chapter 31, we see one of the last few addresses that Moses gives to the general public, in verses 1 through 6, and in it he emphasizes courage. He emphasizes courage. And he says, so Moses went and spoke to these words to all Israel. And he said to them, I am 120 years old today. Happy birthday, Moses. I am no longer able to come and go. And the Lord has said to me, you shall not cross this Jordan. This is the fourth time he's mentioned the fact that he's not going into the promised land. You know, he's brought it up before. He's even said before, it's because of you guys. You know, you made me do it. But so here's this fourth time. I shall not enter the Jordan. It is the Lord your God who will cross ahead of you. He will destroy the nations before you, and you shall dispossess them. And Joshua is the one who will cross ahead of you, just as the Lord has spoken. So it's already been pre-planned that Joshua is going to be the one taking Moses' place. And the Lord will do to them just as he did to Sihon and Gog and Og and the kings of the Amorites. And so they've already destroyed some people. I believe the military term is smoke-checked some people. So they know that God will do this. They know it can be done. And so he's telling them, remember how God did it with these guys. It's going to be like that. And so it's not something, not a foreign concept to them. And as he goes on, he said, the kings of Amorites into their land that when he destroyed them. The Lord will deliver them up before you, and you shall do to them according to all the commandments which I have commanded you. Be strong and courageous, and do not be afraid or tremble at them. For the Lord your God is the one who goes with you, and he will not fail you or forsake you. Then Moses called to Joshua and said to him in the sight of all Israel. So this again, at this point, he begins to address just Joshua, but in the sight of everybody. So Joshua comes up on stage. I don't know. I'm just mentally making a picture of this. And Moses addresses Joshua in the front of everybody and says to him, be strong and courageous, for you shall go with this people into the land which the Lord has sworn to their fathers and give them, and you shall give it to them as an inheritance. The Lord is the one who goes ahead of you. He will be with you. He will not fail you or forsake you. Do not fear or be dismayed. Why is that important to not be afraid? Why would fear be an issue? Exactly. That's exactly what it is. I mean, fear, you know, you've heard the concept being petrified by fear, right? Any of you like scary houses or haunted houses and that kind of stuff? Nobody? Okay. Some of us, yes. Scary movies. You know, I remember when I was a kid, I watched It when it was on TV, Stephen King. And I sat on the couch and did not move, literally, the whole time. And then when I got up to actually start moving, I fell on the floor because my legs were asleep. But I was petrified by fear, you know, watching that clown guy. And so fear can stop us from doing what we need to do. And so he emphasizes over and over again, you've done it before, remember? Remember with these other guys, you've done this. So don't be afraid. Who is going before them? The Lord. You're not physically, yeah, you're there. And I like to think that if their faith was strong enough, if they had gone in there, they just had to go like this, you know, with a sword, and they'd win because they're doing what God wants them to do. They have no real form. These guys were not trained soldiers. I mean, maybe Joshua had some training because that's why I don't know, but these guys are not trained soldiers. So God is going with them. Be strong and courageous. It was what set them back last time. Remember last time? This isn't the first time they've been on the cusp of taking the promised land, and they backed out of it. Yes, sir.
I wonder what Meshach and Abednego was afraid when they put them in the fire.
Oh, yes, sir. And there's a lot of times where we've seen people who've done courageous things. We are not careful to answer you, O king, when they said to him. I love that. I love that. So here we are. Be courageous is what he's telling him. Be courageous with your faith. Be courageous with your trust in God, and you will conquer. God goes before you. Has that changed? Has that changed? Look in Matthew 28:20. Matthew 28:20. We know this, Matthew, end of Matthew 28, right? It is the great what? The Great Commission. And what are some of the last words that are given to us? In verse 20. Be with you always, teaching them to observe all that I command you, and lo, I am with you always, even until the end of the age. God is always with us. He is fighting those battles with us. John 16:33. Do not be afraid. I have overcome the world. I have overcome the world, says Jesus in John 16:33. 2 Timothy 1:7. We have not been given a spirit of timidity, is what, if I can find it quickly here. For God has not given us a spirit of timidity, but of power and love and discipline. Be courageous with your faith. Life demands that. Because you're fighting battles, you are fighting battles spiritually. We are not in the promised land yet, and we're fighting. Be courageous with your faith. And that's what he says over and over again. And in the book of Joshua, in the first chapter, God emphasizes this again and says it four more times. Be courageous and do not be afraid in the first chapter of Joshua. Because, again, it is something that will stop us. It will petrify us if we don't continue on. And so Moses is addressed, or Moses addresses Joshua here. And then verses 9 through 13, a speech is given to the priests and to the elders. And so he says you need to read the law. They're talking about reading the law on the Sabbath sabbatical year. And this is interesting. In verse 12, assemble the people, the men, the women, the children, the alien who is in your town, so that they may hear and learn and fear the Lord your God, and be careful to observe the words of his law. Their children who have not known will hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live, which you are about to cross in Jordan to dispossess. So he's saying on those years, you are to read the law in front of everybody. Everybody. So that they will hear and learn to fear God. Find that interesting in relationship to a public reading of the law. Verses 14 through 22, God basically tells Moses that they're eventually going to fall away. They're going to fall away. Now, if I were Moses, that would be sort of disheartening a little bit. So you're pumping them up, you're doing the motivational speaking, trying to get them to stay close to God, don't leave him, don't be afraid. And then God tells them they're gonna mess up. They're going to leave me. They're going to forsake. They're going to break the covenant that I've made with them. And so later on, we'll see just a blip of an address that Moses makes to the people. It seems all the more urgent for them not to do these things. But God tells them, they will forsake me in verse 16. They will forsake me and will break my covenant, which I have made with them. And then my anger will be kindled against them. But he tells them in verse 19, now therefore write this song for yourselves and teach it to the sons of Israel. And so so chapter 32 is this song that Moses was to write, and it was to be a testimony against them. Every time they sang this song, it was to be a testimony against them, to remind them and to bring them into remembrance of these things. So look down in verse 21. At the last part of verse 21, he says, I know their intent, which they are developing today, before I have brought them into the land which I swore. And so Moses wrote this song the same day and taught it to the sons of Israel. So chapter 32 is a recording of that song. And if you skip down and you look the rest of this chapter, chapter 23, or chapter verse 23, Moses is commissioned, and again, be strong and courageous is the emphasis there. For you shall bring the sons of Israel into the land which I swore to them, and I'll be with you. God speaking to Joshua. And then verses 24 through 30, and there's a message to the Levites. And he says in verse 26, take the book of the law and place it beside the ark of the covenant to the Lord your God, that it may remain there as a witness against you. And we've had several things be a witness against them. Heaven and earth has been a witness to them. The law is a witness. This song also will be a reminder to them. And again, down in verse 28, heaven and earth is called as a witness against them. And so everybody, basically the whole world, is witnessing this covenant that was made. How many of you have signed important documents that required a witness? I mean, that's pretty much everybody. They require a witness. And so he's saying that the law is a witness, heaven and earth is a witness. These are all witnesses to the fact of you have made this covenant agreement. Any questions, comments? So chapter 31, be strong and courageous, is the main emphasis in this chapter. 32, again, as we looked at Deuteronomy, we've gone back and forth to different types of literature in this letter. We've seen narrative, we've seen just basic law giving, and here we see some poetry in this song. And the verses 1 and 2, we have an introduction. Look in verses 3 and 4. It says, for I proclaim the name of the Lord, ascribe greatness to our God. The rock, his work is perfect. For all his ways are just, a God of faithfulness and without injustice. Righteous and upright is he. So in this verse and in verse 18 and verse 30 and in verse 31, God is described as this rock, a solid, immovable mass, something that you just don't. God is their rock, and so this is an overlaying theme in this song. Verses 5 and 6, we have this rebuke that they were acted corruptly. Verses 7 through 14, Israel is reminded of God's grace. In verse 10, it says, he found them in the desert and in the howling waste of the wilderness. He encircled them. He cared for them. He guarded him as a pupil of his eye. Like an eagle that stirs up its nest, that hovers over its young, he spread his wings and caught them. He carried them on his pinions. So here is this song they're supposed to sing and talk about the care that God has provided for them. He has taken them out of the wilderness and carried for them. And verses 13 through 14, we have this the time in Canaan. He made them to ride on high places of the earth. Talking about Israel, he ate the produce of the field. He made him suck honey from the rock. Sort of an interesting imagery. And so just talking about God gave them, God provided so much for them, the finest of the wheat. But for 15 through 18, we talk about apostasy. And an interesting name is used here. What name do you see in verse 15 that you haven't really seen before? Jeshurun. Jeshurun. This is another term used for Israel. And it is really the upright one is what it translates to, the upright one. But it's used in reference to Israel. And so when you see that, it's in reference to all of Israel. And so here we see the apostasy, verses 15 through 18, as they fall away from God. Verses 19 through 27, you have God's reaction to their apostasy. So this is sort of telling a story of God's relationship with them and how they will fall away. And he says in verse 20, I will hide my face from them. When they've broken the covenant, I will hide my face from them. In verse 23, I will heap misfortunes on them, and I will use my arrows on them. In verses 28 through 33, they will not discern that this is from God. They will not discern that these afflictions that they're coming upon them are from God. That God is trying to turn them back towards Him using these things, but they won't understand that. And in verses 34 through 38, you have divine compassion, and the vengeance being God's. Vengeance is mine, and retribution. In due time, their foot will slip. And then verses 39 through 43, we have the greatness of God. See now that I am He, and there is no God besides me. And so again, this concept of vengeance is mentioned, that He will take vengeance on those who have been unjust. And so this is the song that they are supposed to sing to remember. Do you have songs that you sing? I think it's safe to say that most of us may have a song that's special to us. When we sing here and we worship together, we sing psalms, hymns, and spiritual songs, we are to encourage one another with these things, we are to praise God with these things. But there are songs that we sing that maybe have a message to us personally. There's something about music. There's something about a melody. There's something about these things that speak to us. And God uses that here in this case. Here's a song that God had written. God commissioned this song. I would love to know what the melody was. I would love to know how to sing this song. It would still be appropriate today, this song. And concerning, if you take the spiritual application and God taking us out of sin, out of the wilderness of sin, and providing for us. And there are times when we do fall away. But there is that greatness of God that we will be able to come back to relationship with Him. And so it would be interesting to know how this song would be sung. It would be a long song. I think it would be longer than Just As I Am with six verses, right? This is a long song. But it would be interesting to hear this song. But as we close out this chapter, verses 44 through 47, we have an admonishing again to the people. Moses came and spoke to all the words of the song in the hearing of the people, he with Joshua, the son of Nun. When Moses had finished speaking all these words to Israel, he said to them, take to your heart all the words which I am warning you today, which you shall command to your sons to observe and carefully, even the words of this law. Again, always the concept, do not let this stop with you. This is something that must be passed on to your sons, to your children, to future generations. This is not something that stops with you. For it is not an idle word for you indeed. It is your life. That's kind of powerful. When you're reading the Bible, it is not an idle word. It is your life. That is really powerful. It is not just some book that you're reading. It is not just some book that we're trying to conform our lives to. It is our life. And by this word, you will prolong your days in the land which you are about to cross the Jordan to possess. It is your life, not some idle word. And so that's really Moses trying to encourage them. God's told Moses, they're gonna mess up, Moses. They're going to mess up. And Moses is like, yeah, you know, like, they've been that way the whole time. You know, but and so Moses is trying to encourage him. This is what he's trying to do with him. And I forgot to mention, did I mention this before? Yeah, if you look, go back to 31 real quickly. I apologize. In verse 27 of chapter 31, he says, "For I know your rebellion and your stubbornness. Behold, while I am still alive with you today, you have been rebellious against the Lord. How much more after my death?" So apparently something happened on Moses' birthday that replies or goes up to the verse prior to this where God says, "I know their intent which they are developing today." I know their intent which they're developing today. And Moses said, apparently something happened on that day when this was being addressed, that they were already kind of, I don't know what was happening. Maybe they saw a changing of the guard, and maybe they thought things were going to be a little more chill, that Moses was gone. You know, he's not going to be so strict all the time. I don't know. You know, we're just assuming here. Something happened even on that day. And so Moses is commanding them, "This is your life." Yes, sir. Perhaps he's remembering the prior time when they were at the same situation and didn't. Yes, the 10 unfaithful spies discouraged them, and that again could be a reference in the fact that they've been here at this point again. And so here Moses again keeps stressing them, do not go back. And then verse 48, basically here in verse 48 through the rest of this book, we have the last few events of Moses' life. Verses 48 through 52, we have this divine directive from God as to what Moses was supposed to do as far as when he would eventually would die. And God tells him in verse 49, "Go up on this mountain of Abiram, Mount Nebo, which is in the land of Moab, opposite of Jericho, and look at the land of Canaan, which I am giving the sons of Israel for possession. Then die on the mountain where you ascend and be gathered to your people, as Aaron your brother died at Mount Hor, and was gathered with his people, because you broke faith with me in the midst of the sons of Israel at the waters of Meribah Kadesh in the wilderness of Sin, because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the sons of Israel. For you shall see the land at the distance, but you shall not go there into the land which I am giving the sons of Israel." So here's the why. "You did not treat me as holy in the midst of the people." And basically disrespected God in that situation. But God allows Moses to see from a distance that promised land before he's taken up. Yeah, he says to him here, he says, "Because you did not treat me as holy in the midst of the sons of Israel." He's telling them this is what happened. This is the why that this is going to be taking place.
Is that right there?
Yes, sir. He's reminding them that you didn't speak to the rock. You hit the rock when you're supposed to speak to it, and you didn't obey me and treat me as holy in this situation. Yes. Oh yes, and the comment is made that, you know, a lot of people try and say, well, God will understand. God knows my heart, and I don't necessarily have to do it exactly this way. But here's Moses, who, as we'll read later on, was with God in a very special way that nobody else was. And if anybody could have kind of slid something under the radar, so to speak, with God, maybe it would have been Moses. But God said, no, I'll hold you accountable because he is just. And the justice of God and the fairness of God is something that we actually need to trust upon and need to understand that is something that we can rely upon. And God's not going to waver. He's not a respecter of persons. And so if we are trying to sell ourselves with that lie, well, God will understand. It's the same lie from Genesis. You're surely not going to die. It's the same lie. And so we need to see that for what it is.
Josh,
yes?
One thing that's comforting, Elijah.
You're skipping ahead of the story here, man. But yes, that's exactly it. Yep. Yep. We'll see him on another mountain. That's what I was going to close with. That was going on. But you know, and he says he gathers him with his people. So there is there is a measure of grace that's given to him here. He didn't get what he deserved, but he got what God was willing to give him. And so we understand that. And so here is and just something that it's interesting here. Chapter 31, we have the statesman, Moses as the statesman, as far as his relationship to talking and dealing with the people. Chapter 31, we have Moses, or 32 rather, Moses as the singer providing this song. And then 33, we have Moses as the seer. Moses in chapter 31, we see the blessings that Moses gives to the tribes. The tribes, or the original fathers of these tribes, were given blessings by their father, Jacob. And so Moses, in this situation, at the end of his life, he assumes the responsibility of the father in blessing these tribes. This is something that a father would have done at his deathbed, is blessing his sons. And Moses does this here. And so he, verse 1 through 3 is a poetic kind of moment at Mount Sinai. And verse 3, it says, "Indeed, God," speaking of God, "indeed, he loves his people. All your holy ones are in your hand." If you want to write there, Romans 8, 37 through 39. All your holy ones are in your hand. And so nothing can separate us from the love of God. "And they followed in your footsteps, and everyone receives your words." Well, verses 34 or 33b, the end of verse 3 through 5, we see the people responding and how they respond. "We will receive your words." Is basically the response that's given there. And then we see the tribes broken up in different things. Verse 6, we see Reuben is mentioned. Verse 7, Judah. Verses 8 through 11, Levi. And Levi, you know, it mentions the three main responsibilities that the tribe of Levi has. Is one, the Urim and the Thummim, the teaching of the people, and the worship in general. And so those things are mentioned here. He also mentions different events that took place of Massa in Exodus 17, 1 through 7, and Meribah in Numbers 20, 1 through 13. And then he mentions the golden calf and how the tribe of Levi wasn't involved in what went on with the golden calf in Exodus 32, 26 through 39. And so we see those things mentioned here about the tribe of Levi. Verse 12, I'm trying to go through this quickly because we're about out of time. Verse 12, we have Benjamin, and we see this. If you look at the last of this, verse 12, "And he dwells between his shoulders." And he dwells between his shoulders. This is a reference to the ephod. Remember the ephod? That breastplate kind of thing, and the different gems that represented each tribe. So Benjamin is on that, dwells between the shoulders. He has a relationship with God in that, and that's Exodus 28, 12, in reference to the ephod. And then Joseph, 13 through 17, Joseph is mentioned. That's interesting that Joseph would be mentioned. Joseph represents Ephraim and Manasseh. As he was a father of those two, and it was Jacob who blessed those two children instead of Joseph. But basically, he mentions material wealth and military might as far as their blessings in this section. And in verses 18 through 19, we have Zebulun and Issachar kind of mentioned here together. Mentions righteousness. They will offer righteousness sacrifices. And then Gad, verses 20 and 21. Dan in verse 22, Naphtali in verse 23, and Asher at the end here. and verse 25 through 24. And then we have praise being sung to God. Again, Israel being mentioned as Jeshurun. There is no one like the God of Jeshurun who rides the heavens to your help. And through the skies in his majesty, the eternal God is a dwelling place, and underneath are the everlasting arms. And he drove out the enemy before you and said, destroy. So Israel dwells in security, the fountain of Jacob secluded in a land of grain and new wine. His heavens also drop down with dew. Blessed are you, O Israel, who was like you, the people saved by the Lord, who was a shield of your help, the sword of your majesty. So your enemies will cringe before you, and you will tread upon their high places. You will destroy their foreign gods. And so as we see the closing of that blessing, that is a beautiful, beautiful closing there in relationship to how they related to God and how God cared for them. This concept of the everlasting arms, we sing about that in our songs. And so this is a beautiful imagery here at the close of this blessing. And then as we close this book, we have the death of Moses in chapter 34. I don't know about you. That'd be a long walk to go to that mountain. What would you be thinking about as you walked to this mountain? What would you be thinking about? I should have just spoken to the thing. Do we do that? I don't know. It was a long walk to the end of hall to my mom and dad's room when I had to receive corporal punishment. The Board of Education. Yes, sir.
You know, I was thinking. Maybe
that's dangerous. That's dangerous.
Glad.
Maybe he was. Yes. Finally, I'm done with these people. I don't have to go in there anymore. Yeah. Just wash my hands of this. Take the pilot approach to it. Yeah, but you know. We don't know what he was thinking. We don't know. But it's interesting to try and surmise, what would he be thinking about? What would he be thinking about as he goes to this mountain? I'm coming to the end. Here is 100. He's 120 years old. And verse 7 says, although Moses was 120 years old when he died, his eye was not dim, nor his vigor abated. And so God had really blessed Moses. It had been a blessing to be in the presence of God. And maybe those are the things he thought about. Maybe those are what he focused on. We don't know what he thought about. And really, if you really want to get down to just the imagery here, each of us are every day walking towards our mountain. Each of us every day are closer to our mountain. And we honestly don't even, Moses knew exactly when and where this was going to go down, right? We don't. We don't even have that luxury. What are we doing, thinking with our lives as we walk towards our mountain? What are we doing with what's left of our lives? And we see here, as was mentioned earlier, at the close of his life, so the people and the sons, so he goes up, and God says to him in verse 4, this is a land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. And so here we see the completion of another promise of God as they are about to go into this promised land. I've let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over. And so Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab. So Joshua takes the baton, and I'm sure he's like, oh man, now it's my turn to deal with these people. But he deals with them in a different way. You know, every leader has their way of dealing with them. And Joshua, you don't see him being as forceful as Moses was. Moses seemed, as you read the text, obviously he was a lawgiver. There was just a lot more power, physical power, kind of represented with Moses. And Joshua, it says in verse 9, was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him, which I find that interesting, especially in reference to the New Testament, laying on the hands. But anyway, that's another study. And the sons of Israel listened to him and did as the Lord commanded Moses. Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses. And God said, I will eventually raise another prophet like you, in reference to Christ in the future. But here's what he says. The Lord knew him face to face for all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh. Look at Exodus 30. Look at Exodus 3, verses 10 and 11. Exodus 3, verses 10 and 11. What happens in Exodus 3? Do you remember? And I like looking at this. Here's the end of Moses' life in this chapter of his life. He didn't look, and here's the burning bush situation. He says, "Now therefore," and this is God talking, "Now therefore, come now, and I will send you to Pharaoh so that you may bring my people, the sons of Israel, out of Egypt." But Moses said to God, "Who am I? Who am I to do this?" And then we see Moses at the end of his life knew God face to face. There are a lot of people who have this concept about themselves. Maybe Moses just didn't really want to do it. That's a lot of responsibility. Maybe he just didn't want to do it. And he goes through excuse, through excuse, through excuse, until finally God kind of gets perturbed at him and says, "Moses, you're doing this thing. You're doing it." But there's a lot of people who stop short of doing great things for God because they say, "Who am I?" But in the end, it's never about us necessarily. It's about what God can do with us. It's about how great God is. And that's what Moses finally learned. That's a very good point. Yes. God, we accept it's, I think it's partly because of there's this entitlement process, you know. God should accept me for who I am and what I am and just love me. And to an extent, he does love you, but he expects change. He expects growth, and he expects us to come to him on his terms, and instead of the other way around. But as you look at the end here, and you see the bookends here of Moses' life, at least in this capacity, when God called him in this from the burning bush to this mount where he dies. There's this huge transformation that Moses goes through from who am I to this person who is leading such a great people, who walked was face to face with God, as the Bible says here. Such a huge transformation and such great things he was able to do because he did what God wanted him to do. And so we need to see that same potential and possibility in ourselves in relationship to God. Put ourselves, some of us are at different points between the burning bush and that mountain. We're at different points in our relationship with God. But we need to see ourselves in that transitional process as Moses was making that transition. And God used Moses in that way. And then, as was mentioned earlier, Matthew 17, 1 through 3, they were talking together. Moses, Elijah, and Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. And they spoke together. What were they talking about? "Here it is, Moses. This is what you were talking about. Here it is, Elijah. Here's what you were prophesying about. Here's the culmination of the law and the prophets in me. I'm the rock. I'm here. I'm the word." And so that's a huge blessing for Moses to get to be a part of that. And again, on this other mountain, in this Mount Gethsemane, I would have loved to have heard what was being said. Sometimes I think if Peter had not said anything, maybe we would have gotten some information there. But Peter had to open his mouth and do that kind of thing. But it's interesting that Moses, we see Moses again in the New Testament in relationship to Christ is the embodiment, you know, in that aspect, but also here on this mountain, in the Mount Gethsemane. Any questions, comments as we close out this book? It has been a fun study. I've enjoyed doing this with you guys, and I hope that it just spurs you on to study even more deeply this book. There's so much in Deuteronomy we did not even have time to cover, but thank you very much for this time with you.